Admit that reading the ingredients lately on a box of Jell-O makes me weepy, but just listening to that, good Lord. Bill Withers died from heart complications over the weekend. He was 81 years old, of course, responsible for Lean On Me, and we'll be hearing his music throughout the morning this morning. Good morning, everybody. I'm Joe Donahue, and welcome to the Roundtable panel. We have a wonderful group, and we have fantastic people to talk about horrible things, and we will do so right now. Let me introduce everybody. It's 15 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. It is the 6th day of April, and away we go. There's a lot of bumping. I don't know. Do we know?
That worked.
Okay. All right. We're going to check in with everybody, and then we'll see who's making the noise. All right. Good morning, Alan Chartok. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Joe. I'm, you know, I'm hanging in there.
Yeah.
We're all hanging in there. I'm lucky I have Roselle. There are people around who don't have another person with them, and we have to reach out to them and make sure they're okay.
Lean On Me. Absolutely. It's it really is so true. And but I'm so glad you're here and that we get to have this time to talk about all of this stuff. Political consultant Libby Post is with us. Good morning, Libby. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
We're well. I just saw your Facebook post. You look very domestic. You're there. The house, the sun is shining in. It's a gorgeous moment.
Yes, it was. It's a gorgeous moment. Just at that moment when the sun peeked through.
And now the clouds have overtaken and you're ready for that. Okay, all right.
Now the sun's still out.
Okay, good. Libby, thank you very much for being with us. We also welcome investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning. How are you all?
We are fine. And how are you faring?
Very well. Mom and I are here hunkered down. We have the cupboards are groaning from all the supplies, so I don't have to go out again.
Excellent. All right.
Well, and that's tuna fish.
And that, nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. Counterterrorism expert and bestselling author Malcolm Nance is with us. Good morning, Malcolm. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well.
All right. The technology okay? There was some bumbling around there. Extraneous noise. But you got it all under control? We're okay?
I got the noise under control.
Okay.
This will be great.
All right. Good. Very nice to have you with us. I thank you for taking the time. As always, it's nice to have all of us together to discuss these issues, and we welcome your input as well, dear listeners. All you have to do is email us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'd love to hear from you. We just ask that you keep your letters short and to the point and make them easy to read, and we'll get to as many as we possibly can. We've been on letter overload the last several weeks, and we try to get to as many as possible. If we don't get to yours, please don't take it personally, but we will make a good attempt to get to as many as we possibly can. All right, let's talk about what happened over the weekend and what is happening this morning when it comes to the response to the coronavirus. The U.S. Surgeon General invoked World War II on Sunday in warning that Americans brace for a surging death toll. Dr. Jerome Adams says it's going to be the hardest moment for many Americans in their entire lives. Several governors said their states urgently needed federal help and complained about the absence of a consistent strategy from the Trump administration. Inconsistent protocols, limited resources, and a patchwork of decision-making has led to an undercounting of corona deaths in the U.S., according to hospital officials, public health experts, and medical examiners. Both Saturday and Sunday, the president again pushed the anti-malarial drug hydroxychloroquine, offering medical advice that went well beyond the limited evidence of its effectiveness. The president did note, quote, "I'm not a doctor."
And ignoring the side effects of the drug.
Well, that's right. And saying what do you have to lose? And what scientists and doctors and pharmacists are saying is you have a lot to lose. If there are many conditions where you should not be taking this drug, and you do have a lot to lose, we will get into that. Governor Andrew Cuomo announced a one-day drop in the number of deaths in New York State, but cautioned that it could be a blip. We also learned this weekend that Prime Minister Boris Johnson of Britain was admitted to the hospital for tests 10 days after testing positive for the virus. Captain Brett Crozier, who was removed from command of the aircraft carrier Theodore Roosevelt amid an outbreak on the ship, has become infected with coronavirus. And last but certainly not least, a tiger at the Bronx Zoo has tested positive for coronavirus in what is believed to be the first known infection in an animal in the United States. Other tigers and lions in the zoo have also become sick. So that is an interesting wrinkle to this story as well. Those are just some of the big headlines that are coming as we, as I said, brace for what the Surgeon General is referring to as our Pearl Harbor moment. Alan, what do you make of that, of how any of us prepare for such a moment?
Well, Joe, I'm the oldest. And therefore, I haven't ever seen anything. I just want to make sure everybody knows I haven't seen anything like it. I was alive during World War II, believe it or not, and I was very young, of course. But I know that there is nothing that this nation has ever come up against. Now, it's turning out that there is a good deal of evidence that the president was warned by this. There's a piece this morning Dr. Fauci had told the president from day one that there was a real problem of this epidemic, and of course was promptly ignored. The same president who told us that it was all a hoax, a Democratic hoax, and the same president who has been saying from day one, you know, we're almost there, we're almost through it, when his other people are saying this is going to be the worst week that this country has ever faced in terms of the virus. So the politics of the situation are confusing. I mean, because here's a guy who ends up, this president, ends up with a positive reaction from the populace that he's handling this thing well, which to me just simply means it simply means that people are looking for leadership, and if there's none there, they're going to take it wherever they can find it. That's enough for me.
Well, we'll get back to you, certainly. Rosemary Armeo.
Okay, well, I'll go with the captain on the Navy ship, who seems to me was heroic and brave. There may be other information out there we don't have, but it seems to me when I compare him with Eddie Gallagher, who did far worse than try to warn the big brass that his men were dying, there was presidential mercy, and now there's nothing, and the guy is sick. I'd love to hear Malcolm talk about that later on. The Queen gave, and Britain gave, an amazing, a warm, heartening speech. And again, it reminded me, Alan, of the World War II memories, because it's at least of that importance. And I contrasted
it with
the speeches Trump has given, and also with the Surgeon General. I hate that we're quoting the Surgeon General on his Pearl Harbor thing, because mostly he has been insipid, unable to say anything definitive, to make any kind of comments about the government's response, which is appalling. He's just not brave at all. I'm really disappointed. And not only is Trump giving medical advice without a license, which we've noted, he shut up Dr. Fauci, who tried to get in and kind of temper it a bit. He shut him up and pushed him away from the microphone.
I mean, that was literal. I mean, that was
people can be. Yeah. Yeah, how people can be applauding his leadership is, they're blind.
I just want to point out for people who may have forgotten that Eddie Gallagher was the U.S. Navy SEAL who came to national attention. He was charged with war crimes and then was acquitted of those charges while being convicted of bringing disorder or discredit to the armed forces. And the president did not want his rank to be removed from him. Yes, I am interested.
Yeah, look at, I mean, all the people online are talking about the Captain Crozier committed the worst crime in the military, disobeying the chain of command. War crimes is not worse than that?
Well, and also, I mean, the love that he got from his crew as he was leaving that ship was certainly very powerful, I thought. Malcolm, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, this has just been a horrific few days, and I know we're all holed up in our homes working on projects like I am, but it's almost unbearable to listen to the president on anything anymore. We've been saying this for going on 3 years now. Donald Trump is a pathological liar. It is confirmed. There have been thousands of cases of it. And now what we're seeing is what happens when you have a narcissist and a pathological liar try to handle an event. According to the Washington Post and from the work that I was doing myself very early on, Donald Trump was warned by the Central Intelligence Agency on 3 January that the Chinese were covering up the size of the pandemic, which broke out earlier, and that they had been, that there was the possibility of a massive viral outbreak that could go global. Trump ignored all of that. He fought with Secretary Azar, the head of Health and Human Services, and he spent 2 months calling this essentially a hoax, or that it was taken care of, that it would go away like a miracle, as he would say. And then when it finally became clear to him from the experts that this nation was going to lose 150,000 to 200,000 dead when this is all over and done with. Oh, and by the way, this may not end when it tails off. It may all start all over again this September. Trump was incompetent. His staff is incompetent. That Surgeon General, by the way, Jerome Adams, he was the guy who was the head of Health and Human Services in Indiana when he followed Mike Pence's orders to stop needle exchanges and cause the biggest outbreak of HIV in the last decade in the United States. And he got appointed Surgeon General, and he is incompetent. Yesterday, I spent a good piece of the day calling for him to resign and to have Fauci take over the role of Surgeon General. Adams cannot be believed. He's the guy that said that Trump was in far better physical shape than him, a mid-40s-year-old black athlete, which is just insane. Mm-hmm. So all of that aside, well, I'll talk about the Navy captain and the rest of that later. But right now, we're in danger. And I know that I'm really good at ramping people up and warning people about things that are going to come out and bite them. I'm really good at that game, but I don't have to do it anymore. You just have to see it in context to understand that we are all in our homes for our own safekeeping and well-being. But still, most of this nation thinks it's hyped. We have entire states that are taking zero precautions. So this thing is going to keep burning and reburning as it moves on. And I, for one, I'm going to keep along with the rest of you, keep sounding this alarm. This isn't a joke. It isn't a game. And today I would like to hear from the Trump voters out there who think we're just going over the top.
So what's your take, Malcolm, on why over 50% of the people when polled think the president's doing a good job?
Well, actually, I understand that those two original polls have dropped by as far as 17 points. In one last poll, I understand that the ratio now is 52 disapprove of his handling of coronavirus and 44 approve. You notice that number 44. Alan, we've been talking about this number for 3 years. These are the propagandized. These are the people that believe any word that comes out of Trump's mouth.
So what's it all about?
It was a hoax. It's about cultism, if you want to be honest.
It's no, about it's ideology. About it's about racism, I believe. I believe,
oh, well,
it's, I believe it's just racism.
It underscores everything Trump does.
Keep America people, white.
Right. Well, these people don't think this is going to affect them and that their lives are being disrupted by some horrible thing that's happening in the cities. It's not. It will touch every square inch of this nation. And it's just a question of whether those Midwest and Southern areas that have zero ICU beds in their counties are going to lose large numbers of people before they come out of this trance they're in. And I don't think they will. I think they'll just blame it on New Yorkers and Los Angelinos. But they will not blame the incompetence of Donald Trump. Just bloodly, deadly incompetence.
All right. I promise that we will get to Libby when we come back. Libby, thank you very much for being so patient.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be right back with you. I just have to take a quick break, and we'll be back. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation after this short break.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away. I wonder this time where she's gone.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Malcolm Nance, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post, who I give the floor to now. Good morning.
Good morning. How is everybody?
We're all
right.
Everybody's
a little, riled up, which is just fine. That's the way we need to be. I think that there are a number of factors that I want to just touch on. One is we are being governed by one of the biggest criminal enterprises yet. I mean, this man is probably making money off of all of this. The idea that Jared Kushner over the weekend or on Friday said the national stockpile was the federal government's and why should the states get it, is just one more example of the fact that these people have no idea what they're doing. They don't understand the role of government. They don't understand the relationship between the federal government and the states, and that the reason why they have a federal stockpile is to help the states. So that's number one. Number two, the idea that states have to compete against one another, compete against other countries. It'll be interesting to see everybody's stock portfolio that's in the White House and in the Republican Party after this is all over. That's all I have to say, and where they're investing their money. And yes, this is about race. It's always been about race, always. And I've thought from the very beginning of this, one of the reasons why he took such a benign neglect approach, Stephen Miller is, whispering in his ear, oh, don't worry, President, if you want to call him that. The people without health insurance will get sick and die. And we all know that those people without health insurance, Mr. President, they're all black people and brown people, the people we don't want in this country. So they made this calculation. I've felt pretty secure in that. For a while, look, we still have children in cages down at the border, but they made this calculation, and this calculation is going to backfire on them because it's the South that has a perfect storm gathering, whereas I think Malcolm mentioned they don't have extensive health care. They're not paying attention. The 10 governors that are not doing any kind of stay-at-home order are all Republican governors. Look at Andy Beshear in Kentucky. He's doing it. His cases are down. Go a few states down, and the cases are going to overwhelm the healthcare system, and people are going to die. And Trump's voters are going to die. That's what they don't seem to quite get. I think there are some in the Republican Party who are starting to recognize that this is going to be a nightmare for the president. And a nightmare for his reelection chances. And so, this is what we got, folks. And it's up to all of us to keep our eye on the prize, which is November. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay home, but keep working on November.
I want to just say, see if I get this right, but I think as of this morning, there are actually 8 states that have not put in the orders for a stay at home. And I'm trying.
No, that's good. At least a couple of them did. I mean, you also have the right wing, radical Christian right fundamentalist preachers, none of whom have stepped up to help anybody. And talking about Pat Robertson, the gays caused this. Somebody else said, if you breathe deep, you'll get rid of it. I mean, you know, the hydroxychloroquine. Yes. Trump is a snake oil salesman. This is the magic elixir. You know, this is what they warned us about in films like Elmer Gantry, and now we are falling prey to it.
Alan.
Well, I just wanted to say that one thing that that needed to be said about Jared Kushner, who is really below, was the idea that he spoke for the national government and used the us word, U.S., us, versus them. That's unbelievable, isn't it, Lib?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. I mean, it's like, it's not us and them. The government, the federal government is here to help the states in times of crisis. And the states are here to help the federal government in times of crisis. That's what happened during World War II. You know, we all got together. We all put our shoulder behind the boulder and pushed forward. We all did what we had to do. The president, Roosevelt, was able to get the industries to build planes, to build armament, to do what we needed to do to fight the Nazis. Trump could have done this, but he ignored it because it was not worth his time, because he didn't understand, and more importantly, he doesn't care.
Right.
The man is a sociopath, let alone a habitual liar. He's a sociopath. His ethical core is his ego.
So, just for clarification, 9 different states in the South and Midwest have yet to announce statewide orders as of Sunday. Arkansas, Iowa, Nebraska, North Dakota, and South Dakota have all resisted issuing any kind of stay-at-home orders, while Wyoming, Utah, Oklahoma, and South Carolina have only issued orders in parts of their states. The governors are all Republicans, we should note.
Right.
Malcolm.
Furthering what Libby just said there, and a good point was made on Morning Joe this morning, when they said Donald Trump does not understand or is redefining the phrase federalism. And he believes that the federal government is a machine which exists for him, his administration, and only his few supporters, and that the job of government is actually the states, and that fantastical, insane statement made by Jared Kushner that this belonged to us, that Trump had to come out later and say, it's federal, it's for the federal government, it's not for you, is insane, really. I mean, I'm giving you guys the proper level of outrage today, because I spent every minute of my life trying to ensure that as a member of the federal government, member of the intelligence community, that we took care of you, all of you, without regard to your voting preference or your location in the United States. If you were an American citizen, you were our charge. This man does not believe any of that. He thinks this machine belongs to him. And as, what's his name, General Russell Honoré, on MSNBC the other day, ripped into Jared Kushner, and he said he's incompetent, he's a fool, he doesn't know what he's saying. All these resources are designed to assist the states, but the United States government should lead. They don't want to lead. I understand that this Operation Air Bridge is where foreign governments are flying materials to us, like the Russians, and we are selling or giving these materials to private contractors to sell to the states, which is in itself even enormously crazy. Trump is killing Americans due to criminal negligence and incompetence. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's playing this thing like it's a game. Tens of thousands of us are going to die from this incompetence, and our only hope is now that our governors like Governor Cuomo and Governor Beshear and all the rest will take charge and step in and do what the president of the United States will not do, because he expects to have, you know, his posterior kissed. And he practically said that the other day. You needed to be, be more gracious and, you know, show some approval. Then we're in deadly, deadly trouble.
Rosemary Armeo.
I'd like to point out one other wrinkle in this, which is that Putin is looking pretty much a hero. We don't know how many deaths or illness, or how much illness there is in Russia. He's clamped down on the press in a way Trump is only aspiring to so far. So we don't know how bad it is. And he, meanwhile, is sending out medical supplies. He has taken over the position America once had as a leader and the innovators who led the way out of crises like this. We've lost so much. And again, go back, his reward for all of this, he's killing us, he's betrayed the traditions of our country, is ever increasing approval from the American voters. That should scare us all.
It should. I want to, this is a one issue.
Quick note, Joe?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I got some new polling that just came in from University of Florida.
All right.
To talk about that approval. Trust in Trump to give reliable COVID ID information, 41% yes, 58% no. A 17% drop.
Now, is that just in, I'm sorry, is that just in Florida, or is that nationwide?
No, that right now is Florida. Just most of these polls are showing Trump now underwater in approval. People do not, as people die, this is going to break right down to the 44% that Alan and I always talk about. Actually, I think we talk about the crazy 25, right, Alan?
We do.
Yeah. His approval rating, any way you look at it, is up from his first year in office, and it should not be. I mean, if you go by reason and efficacy, he just has not. Doesn't deserve even 44%. And I get it that like 30% of Americans think, you know, we're under attack by aliens, so you can't count on more than that. But he's up 14% over that. It still doesn't make any sense to me.
All right. Go ahead.
I'm looking at polls here. Even Smussen has his approval rating at only 44%. And disapproval has gone up 9%. I mean, you know, it's not good for him. And I do think that things are going to get worse for him. All of us are looking at him, they all have disapproval ratings that are higher than approval ratings. So, you know.
And there we go. Okay.
Joe, Libby's phone is
here. Yeah, Libby, you're, I don't know. Are you on a landline or a...
I'm on our phones. I'm going to back in.
Okay, so we're going to take a break. We'll let you do that, and we don't want to miss any of your words. Okay?
Yeah, no, I'm sure.
Oh, no, right.
We want to hear every word pristine and clear. We're going to take a break. We'll fix that. We'll be right back after this.
Up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes, and something without warning, love, bears heavy on my mind. Then I look at you.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Malcolm Nance, and Rosemary Armeo. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org.
Joe?
Yes.
Joe, I wanted to ask Libby a question I've been meaning to ask her since the New York State budget came out. It may not be on our agenda today, but it's fascinating. And that's the question, as you know, Governor Cuomo inserted into the budget, surrogacy. A reform on surrogacy, legalizing it. And I wondered, I've been thinking about Libby a lot, what she thinks about this. There seems to be, a lot of approval from the gay community. There are some women who are thinking it ain't right. Libby, you're a fair arbiter here.
Well, you know, the gay part of me is saying yay for all the gay men and even lesbians who have problems conceiving to be able to have kids. And then the feminist part of me is like, oh, okay, so we're going to rent women's bodies out and they're really not going to have much control. So it's really, I have not come down one way or the other on this. I just feel very, very conflicted.
All right. Let us go. I wanted to read something. You know, on Friday, I believe it was, the Governor Cuomo, during his briefing, he made this announcement on Friday, signed the order Friday afternoon, and talked about it again during his briefing on Saturday. And this was the idea of taking the ventilators in other parts of the states where they were not being used and bringing them to New York City where they were desperately needed. This, of course, this made certain people, like Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, very, very upset that, quote, shifting scarce upstate resources to downstate, such as ventilators, we need an immediate surge in testing capabilities. So her argument now is she came out against this on Friday. And is now saying that we should have increased testing for the North Country to make sure that people don't have the disease before we reallocate the decisions. My question to the group is, well, okay, but why weren't you calling for testing like everybody else was of this administration early on? And two, I just thought personally that the governor was so eloquent in comparing this to an FDR moment of saying, look, this is what we need to do, and we will repay you, and we will bring it back when you need it. But right now, instead of just sitting there not doing anything, we desperately need this equipment. Alan.
And we should point out that Joe Donahue comes from Greenwich, New York. So it's not as if you're a city slicker, you know, making the counter argument. Look, she is a Republican. She has been anointed by this president as the young, vibrant Republican. And she is going to always be saying, they're taking stuff away from us. It's what the local person does. It's an extraordinary person who can rise above that, and she ain't it.
Well, Jim Tedisco was on Facebook this weekend saying the exact same thing.
Of course.
It's, you know, it's like people, you know, we are one state. This is one man, Cuomo, who knows what he is doing. He can manage this situation, and yes, you'll get your ventilators back. I mean, what this is about is a profit margin for some of these folks. So it's like you'll get your ventilators back, but you know what? If New York City goes down, the rest of the state goes down. It's
maybe
just
the country.
Simple.
Maybe the country goes
right.
down.
And the country and the people upstate just don't want to recognize that.
Well, that's right. Even in little Great Barrington, 7,000 full-time residents, we have. Some rather despicable people who are coming out and saying, keep these second homers out of here. So it becomes sort of we versus they. It's awful.
Yeah, I've seen elements of that in Greene County and not so much where I'm at in Columbia County, where we have a lot of New York City second homers. And this is actually a great place for them to hole up for 14 days.
You bet.
And, you know, not be part of the New York City issue. But I can just remark about Congresswoman Stefanik real quick.
Yes.
There is, and I've seen this not just in the news media and what you're hearing on the radio. I follow a lot of extremist groups and their chats. And one of them, a person who was in her district in upstate New York, came out and said it was all hoax, and then said, this is a plot by downstaters to take our resources. They don't understand. Like you said, they don't understand this state. It takes 6 hours to drive across this state. From the furthest reaches, but they have this view that first, it's all blown out of proportion, and second, now you're taking from us. And to be honest, this is where Alan's case, that it's a form of racism.
Yes.
And political extremism that doesn't inform us or help our health. These people would be savaged with COVID if New York City wasn't taking the activities that they're doing right now. In my little county, Columbia County, I think we've got just a couple of deaths, but we have a couple of hundred cases now, and we are one state, and it will burn like wildfire through every other state in this nation. Don't doubt that for a second.
Alan?
But you know, Stefanik is not going to lose an election over this. This is the kind of cowardly thing that somebody who should be expected to step above, you know, the fray and say, okay, listen, we're all in this together, which the president keeps intoning. We're all in this together. She's not going to lose. People are going to say, yeah. We shouldn't let those people, those New Yorkers, take what we have.
I'd hang every death around.
I would point out, I'm not hearing her opponent saying a whole lot of these things. We're making the case against Stefanik, but her opponent is not. How come she's not out there saying your representative is sowing the same divisiveness that has put this country in the state it is right now? She's a big cultic follower of Trump now, and this is why we're in the situation we are. Here's what we should be doing instead. I am not hearing that from a Democratic opponent who I really think Stefanik is right about. She's not competent.
She may be saying it. She may be saying it, but nobody's getting traction. I mean, come on.
You know what? There are cowards in both parties.
Let me see. I just want to make sure I have the. I mean, she has not commented on this particular issue, at least on her Twitter, on her feed. And I'm talking about Tedra Cobb, who is the Democratic candidate running against Elise Stefanik in that district. Okay. We have a lot of letters. I want to get to those. We have not gotten to any yet, so let me start. We begin with my computer seizing up. We begin with Paula, who says, who will benefit from Trump's touting of unproven drugs to treat COVID? Pharma. Trump's family, political contributors, follow the money, says Paula.
Mm-hmm.
Mark says, Malcolm, could you explain what the pandemic response would look like if Trump turned the response over to the military? Is this possible, and how involved would Trump be after the turnover?
Yes, let me tell you, good question. I'll make it short. You guys, when I was on a couple of weeks ago, I told you that I'd been through a program at the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute for Infectious Diseases, USAMRID, related to biological weapons used by terrorists and what it would look like in the United States and what our response should be. So that was 15 years ago I went through that program, and viruses were the worst, right?
Right.
Marburg, smallpox, things like that. Nation killers, we call them. The response, if this was under General Russell Honoré, right, the commander of Joint Task Force New Orleans, when the city drowned, would be dramatic. It would be nationwide. You would see the mobilization of every military resource we have. He was just talking about it yesterday. We have incredible logistics. So that wherever there's a holdup, you can send trucks, army trucks, to move them. You would have liaison officers in every state command center who would start coordinating the materials. And most importantly, it would take on a national effort to ensure that everyone in this nation was covered, and that our healthcare professionals could have food kitchens next to them, tents for them to go to for secure sleeping, would have all the PPE distributed in a timely manner. We have tens of thousands of trucks. We have thousands of transport aircraft. We have hundreds of thousands of soldiers available, and not one of them, except the few state National Guardsmen, are moving. And the USS Mercy, which was bought, or was it Comfort, or Comfort came to New York,
right?
That was brought up as staged as a show by Donald Trump, when in fact they needed that ship to take on COVID patients. And only after days of delay is it doing that. This is incompetence by the civilian leadership. And it offends me as a professional service member, an intelligence community member, to see such inflaming stupidity going on.
Peter writes...
Anyway, Joe, just in the interest of What if? Malcolm, I understand exactly what you're saying. I'm sitting here looking at your book, The Plot to Betray America, and I have great respect for you. But you do know, of course, as an historian and somebody, that very often when the military take over, it doesn't stop there. It goes on forever. And so that's something you got to watch out for.
We're not really rigged for that anymore, okay? We're not Argentina, right? This isn't a junta of generals is not going to take over. The reason you don't see any real military response is because we respond to civilian authority. No orders have been given, nothing will move. But you see Trump attack a captain of a ship who was looking out for the health and well-being of his sailors, relieve him of command, because he dared take care of his sailors, when, as Rosemary said earlier in the show, he pardons a convicted war criminal. This administration is upside down. Upside down. I'm sorry?
All right. He was just saying you were right, Malcolm. That's all. Yeah. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have Alan Chartok, Olivia Post, Malcolm Nance, and Rosemary Armeo. We will hear from all of them and hear your letters as well. We'll do that. First News with Ray Graff. Six minutes past 10 o'clock. Welcome back to the roundtable for this Monday, the 6th of April. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Malcolm Nance, and Rosemary Armeo. We have many, many letters. I want to get to those. So we begin with Peter, who says, thank you for coming together each day to make us informed about COVID-19. Yesterday, I listened to the president's daily MAGA rally. He made no sense whatsoever. His ignorance is very scary. We then go to this letter from Don, who says COVID-19 is the excuse for eliminating all environmental regulations, so it's a good time to dump all your wastes into the air, water, and ground. It's also the reason for excusing employers from paying into the payroll tax. How long do you think Social Security and Medicare will last without any replenishing funds? Instead of Medicare for all, I fear we're headed for Medicare for none. Then Daryl says, this is for Malcolm. There are some apparent conspiracy theories about some corporations behind this coronavirus thing. Is there anything to this?
No, it's just nature, and Mother Nature is punching back hard.
All right. Bob says, when the red states start suffering like the blue ones, will it lead to civil disruptions as law and order break down? At what point does the willingness to listen to leaders stop? Insurrections come from such conditions. Let's pray for more responsible leadership.
Can I touch on that for a second?
Of course.
Yeah, as I said, I watch these extremist forums and these, you know, ultra-conservative forums. And one of the questions they keep asking is, when is this going to break down? And they seem to think, and I'm talking about extremists, what they're planning for and what they're buying ammunition and guns for at an astronomical rate. You just cannot believe how much is flying around now. They say that wait till that $1,200 check runs out and no more money comes. So, you know, to a certain extent, that could happen in some extreme places where they have no health care, which is likely in the South and the West.
You know, Joe, I was watching PBS the other day,
yep.
And they had a very extensive program about the Spanish pandemic, the Spanish flu. And it's astounding how on target in terms of deaths and everything else this country has been in this COVID with that flu. It turns out, of course, that we should have known it was coming because it sure came the last time.
And as Malcolm said, there were a lot of warnings going back, even with Dr. Fauci going back several years. Let's see. We go to Mark, who says there is something worse than the Trump administration right now, and that's Fox News. The FCC should seriously consider penalizing them because the propaganda they're spewing as if the coronavirus is overhyped is costing American lives.
Wait. This is the same FCC that the President of the United States appoints the head and the majority on the FCC? That's pretty funny,
right? Yes, right. That would never happen.
Mark says people are dying as a result, and what over the airwaves could be worse than that? But yes, what could be done? We also go to David, who says, it seems to me that Governor Cuomo is demonstrating to Trump the art of being a leader through these daily press conferences. To me, it sounds like he is talking to Trump directly, step by step. We know Trump is watching him. If only Trump would take the hint.
He would say, okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I think I put a mute on my phone or something because I wanted to respond to a letter a little bit backward that Trump should have seen this coming.
Go ahead.
He was never going to see it coming. He has discounted intelligence, and he is a gambler. So even if they came as Azar, as we know that Azar and Fauci did, and said, hey, this is coming, you have to deal with it, he didn't want to. He was going to gamble that it would be nothing. And why not? We've not had a pandemic like this since 1918. And he's not someone who's going to listen to say, hey, it's our time. Instead, he's going to do the things that he cares about, which he still cares about. He's still firing people who played a role in his impeachment. He is about revenge and about getting reelected.
And you know, when it's all over, and when it's,
he has never lost sight of it.
And you know, when it's all over, Rosemary, he's going to take credit for having gotten us through this. You know that.
So in other words, isn't
he?
Well, yes. So whenever it's over, if it's over, and if he has enough time before the election, he's going to say, proclaim himself the hero of the whole thing, despite all of those grieving families and people who have lost wonderful people in their families. He's going to say, I did this.
Yep. But he has never expressed one iota of compassion for anyone who has lost anybody thus far. It's like all he knows how to do is throw paper towels to people in a crisis. That's all he knows how to do.
I certainly am not wishing it on them, but it would take Ivanka or Jared or one of his grandchildren to be taken by
maybe
the disease before it was.
I don't believe that at all.
I'm not wishing that on them, but he does not see things unless it touches him personally.
I think if it touches his wallet, and it is, it's impacting him. And this is
touching his wallet. We know his businesses are losing like $1 million a month. He's not doing well in this, but he's aimed at. That's why the whole thing is, let's get the economy up and running again. He has to have foot traffic through his hotels and his businesses, his golf courses.
He based everything on the Dow Jones. And now every dollar earned since the end of the Obama administration has been lost. And it will get worse as the Midwest and the South and the other 40 states that aren't, 40 some odd states that aren't massively in the same place as New York as they get hit.
Malcolm, it's already pretty bad right now. We've said repeatedly, if the economy goes, he loses his support. But we know that the unemployment rate already is at the level of the Depression, and that's in the first couple of weeks. It is going to get worse, and it isn't going to come back quickly. So the economy is shot, and he's now claiming that he's doing a good job. If he only ends up killing, if his bad policies only end up killing 100,000 Americans, which is more than Vietnam, more than Korea.
He's hedging his bets on
that number. So how bad does it have to be before he really is in trouble?
Well, for his base, they could take anything. He is literally killing American citizens on Fifth Avenue, and they don't care. So, as you say, until it affects their families personally, and they'll still justify it. This is cult ideology, and Americans can die in places, in other places. But these people that I'm seeing on these extremist forums, and some of them aren't so extreme, they're just mainstream right-wing forums, they say this, so you think it would be better if Cuomo or Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer was in charge? Trump's the best we have.
Yes.
And they're going to stay with that to their deaths.
Well, and it's the best that those people have, because that's all they want. But it's not the best we have in a global sense.
Alan?
And the answer is, if any of those Democrats you mentioned were in charge, they never would have disestablished, if there's such a word, the
right.
You know, the office of the pandemic office that's supposed to be looking to this. So, yeah, the answer is it would have been much better if a Democrat were in charge.
Well, you know,
this swine never would
flu
have happened.
Was thrown around quite liberally by these people. You know, Obama had swine flu. The United States economy didn't collapse in swine flu. It was handled quickly, effectively, and aggressively to the point it didn't disrupt America's lives. But, you know, we're about to break the 12,000 number deaths that happened during swine flu, and we're going to destroy that by an order of magnitude. And Trump will see it as a victory if it doesn't touch a million.
Rita writes...
Well, Trump will, but it's more depressing is that other Americans will see it that way. And again, it gets back in part to that thing about Democrats not messaging well. We were not terrified of swine flu. Maybe we should have been. We were not. We are of this one. And again, the good job that Democrats did is not known. It's just not known.
Rita writes to us and says, stop excusing Trump with being ignorant about federalism. He gets it. He just doesn't like it. The Republicans have been excusing him as a non-politician who doesn't understand the machinery of government for 3 years. Don't underestimate him, says Rita.
I agree with that. I think that Rita is right. I think they are executing Steve Bannon's orders, and they don't think that they, as the government who owns it, has to get involved in this because its impact, unless it impacts their money. I think they don't believe in government at all, and this is what happens when you don't have a government.
Mm-hmm.
We go, same thing, very similar letter from Louise, who says, we need to stop saying Trump is incompetent. He knows what he's doing. I am done making fun of him, too. He is a dangerous person. Everyone, wake up.
By the way, I've been saying that from day one. He got, you know, people say he's stupid. He doesn't know anything. He's evil, all right, but he's not stupid. You know, the fact of the matter is he got himself elected president, maybe because he understood what the American people were all about, what quiz shows were about and all of the rest. But he got himself to be president of the United States, and now he is doing tremendous damage. So for people, I still believe
he's deeply ignorant of history, of governance, of American ideals and traditions and writings. I don't know. I know there's a difference between ignorant and stupid. I think he gets credit, if you will, for being both evil and ignorant.
Okay.
John says, this is a question for Malcolm. I'm curious how our system would work in the following scenario, regardless of whoever was the president. While I do not imagine this to happen, fingers crossed, nothing is out of the question when you are talking about Trump. That said, what mechanism and who would step in if Trump or any other president lost a presidential election and said the election was compromised and they would not leave the White House? Come Inauguration Day, what would happen? What would this, who, Malcolm, you have addressed this before, but.
Yeah, the system is automatic. The question is, are there going to be people within that system like the Senate, the Republican Senate, the Supreme Court, who decides that they will break 244 years of precedence? To be honest, I think we need to be prepared for that. But the best way to be prepared is right now, I would start writing Nancy Pelosi and all the others, and I've communicated with them, that mail-in balloting should be prepared for this next election. This should be what every citizen, who, if you get a check, you get money, you're above 18, you get a ballot. And Trump himself came out and said that last week, that would be the end of the Republican Party. He does not want open voting like this. So we have to insist that this happen. Otherwise, look, the man is an authoritarian. His best friend is a North Korean murderous dictator, okay, and an ex-communist KGB ruthless agent. And he would, I think, if it was in his interest as July and August comes in, he would say, okay, well, we're not going to do the election, or we're going to do it only through absentee ballots so that they can be manipulated at the state level by his friendly governors. I think I'd put nothing past him. And I think he will take advantage of this crisis to try to hold on to power. He's essentially a dictator. Dictators don't let power go.
All right, let's go to more letters. We go to Scott, who says, does anyone have any knowledge of which pharmaceutical company Trump is so invested in that he keeps trumpeting hydroxychloroquine?
No, but it is Novartis.
Is it Novartis?
Novartis, and Novartis tried to get Michael Cohen to lobby Trump for them, and Cohen said no. So there is some interest around all of this. But, you know, as I said before, it's about looking at their stock portfolios in 6 months.
Let's go to Mark, who says, conservative historical author and Washington Post columnist Max Boot has declared Trump the worst president ever after reviewing a long list of bad presidents. Many other conservatives voice the same opinion. Why are their messages Why are their messages lost upon Trump's supporters? Rosemary?
It's a great column. Matt Boot column, it ends with somewhere James Buchanan is breathing a sigh of relief. He's the guy whose stealing policies led to the Civil War. This guy is worse because more Americans are likely to be killed because of Trump. The problem, however, is not history. History is going to – I think we liberals are pretty sure that he will get a bad mark from history. It's what happens in November, because the next 4 years are crucial, and that's on us.
His followers won't believe it because, again, they're locked into cultism. Let me tell you, Fox News is next to Facebook – is the greatest killer of democracy in this nation. Mm-hmm. They lie openly. And if you've seen the video from The Daily Show, which calls Heroes of the Pandemic,
yes,
where they show each one of these people, Hannity, Ingram, all the rest, sitting there and lying and saying there is no coronavirus. It's a hoax. It's designed to do, erase impeachment. And then them flipping and saying, we said this from the beginning, Trump is a hero, it's just disgraceful.
All right, let's go to James, who says, you can only criticize. Do yourselves a favor and stop being so hateful. We all hear your animus. Nearly everyone is following the presidential guidance. COVID is Chinese-originated viral infectious disease. Nothing racist about referring to it as Chinese. All you can do is be negative. That from James on the quote-unquote pandemic panel.
People
are being attacked. People are being attacked by it, Asian Americans.
Well, if we all know it so well, it's interesting how many letters of support, how many people are listening to this radio station who never listened before. Come on now, that's just not true. You want to lie, you want to send a lying letter, that's fine. But more people are listening, more people are congratulating us for what we're doing, and that's absolute nonsense.
Well, let me jump in here, okay? My job for 35 years was to warn this nation of threats, and I did it well. And now that I'm in civilian world and I'm in national media, it's my job to keep warning you of these threats. So don't come at us and say, oh, you're talking about something and you're not being constructive. There's no construction here. We are under attack. We are losing citizens. And it could have, the way this happened on 9/11 and Pearl Harbor, this is a slow burn threat. Take it seriously. Help your neighbors and be prepared for this nation to go the long haul. But don't tell us we can't criticize. That's why we have a First Amendment, and that's why we defend the Constitution. Yikes.
All right. Let's go to Laura, who says, Alan, I'm concerned about Trump postponing the November 2020 presidential election indefinitely and want to help now to ensure this won't happen. I'm an average person, and I'm not sure who to contact, what organization to reach. Any suggestions?
Well, Nancy Pelosi, of course, is the stopgap. She's the one who will be in the way of him trying to pull that kind of crap. But that doesn't mean he won't get away with it. Look, history is replete with people, Malcolm will tell you about this, with people, with dictators and others, who started out by canceling elections or loading an election. We know what that's all about. You don't have to look back further than Hitler to understand what goes on when this happens.
Yeah, this is the Reichstag fire. He's got his excuse right here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but It's a question of whether we let that, what happens next, which would be Kristallnacht, right?
So the question is, how do you stop it? How do you stop it? Malcolm, the question was...
Okay, so here's my wish. I want Biden and Bernie to get together, and Bernie becomes the marshal of the election to make sure it doesn't get rigged. And they join forces, and they put Democrats back into power.
How do you get a marshal?
Well, you can just forget that.
Yeah. Is that a badge, or what? How does that work? Yeah. Go ahead, Malcolm.
No. Well, first off, that's not going to happen. And in fact, the very fact that Bernie Sanders has that Biden has a lead over Sanders that cannot be done, and that we're risking people's lives to continue this contest. Bernie needs to concede, and we need to unify in our shadow government to a certain extent, where Biden needs to come out. You saw yesterday's unscheduled Trump coronavirus briefing was held at the time Joe Biden was doing an online town hall. Trump fears Biden. He fears the Democrats getting their acts together, and he wants this chaos. Like you said, slow burn Reichstag, because as soon as June comes and it tapers off in the East and it starts burning in the West, he will use the East as the cudgel to mobilize those people in the West. And he will split the nation if he has to, leading up to the election. And we cannot allow this to happen. And the only thing that stops it is sunlight, like discussions that we're having.
Daisy is...
Again, I go back. I think dramatic action brings about change. And I think that Bernie does need to leave, but that isn't going to happen.
Rosemary, you're off mic there.
Hey, Rosemary, get your face closer to the phone.
My God, I'm holding it right. Is that better?
Yeah, much better. I think it was. Yeah,
okay,
you're good.
Sorry about that.
No, okay.
I think that if Biden were to do something dramatic with Bernie, make him important, then even if he said no, I don't want to do that, I just want to fight you, then you have room for the Democratic National Convention to come in and say, okay, we don't need a primary, we've got our candidate, and then just get going from there. We're stuck. The Democrats are still stuck in primary mode when we're not even doing primary campaigning.
You have just convinced me that I think you're right. No, really. And I think that Joe Biden, I mean, this is the power of conversation. While you were saying it, it popped into my head. If Biden were to say, when this is over and done with in a Biden administration, we will have a national review of Medicare for all. Right?
Yep.
We said we can't spend those trillions. We just threw those trillions out in the street, and we're going to throw trillions more. I think that could be a form of reconciliation, because I really think the infrastructure of this nation is broken, and the medical infrastructure is really broken. And now, look, we're doing universal basic income. So I think that this is all possible. I think the entire Democratic platform can go back on the table, but we got to unify around one candidate, and that ain't going to be Bernie.
Robert writes to us and says it was reported yesterday that Trump has been tested twice for coronavirus despite that he had no symptoms, bragging that he will not wear a mask and the rest of us cannot be tested until severe symptoms occur. When Jared Kushner declares that the ventilators in the federal stockpile are ours, Trump envisions them as reserved for his personal use as a ventilator sitting unused in the White House. That from Robert. We go to Daisy. You said, I recommend to you and the listeners to start listening to Joe Biden's new podcast, Here's the Deal. I know, it's probably edited like crazy. I don't care. It's like chicken soup for the spirit. We go to Don, who says, on March 17th, Trump said he knew the coronavirus outbreak was a pandemic long before it was declared. The World Health Organization declared the coronavirus outbreak as a pandemic on March 11th. So perhaps Trump knew there was a pandemic in late February. Therefore, Trump, by his own admission, could have issued strict distancing mandates in late February rather than in late March. If he had done so, many lives could have been saved in our country. Is he not guilty of criminal negligence?
What are they talking about? He's the guy who said the whole thing was a hoax. Forget about it. He was late to the game. He said it was a hoax. Why do people forget
a Democratic
that?
Hoax.
Well, no, but to the point is that I think the point's a good one. I'm saying on the 17th of March that he knew that the coronavirus was a pandemic long before it was declared. He is therefore and then he said that he did not know, making the point that he knew earlier than he is claiming that he did.
Secretary Azar said that he notified the White House on January 14th that coronavirus would grow into a global pandemic. Then he notified him several more times. He got in trouble because he talked about vaping. Trump was notified by the intelligence community, and there was a Department of Defense intelligence assessment in the last week of January that estimated 150,000 Americans would die from this. So don't forget about March. This guy was notified in January, but he doesn't care. He didn't care because, honestly, he is stupid. Let's just put that on the table. But as Alan says, he's stupid and evil. And that is a horrible combination.
All right, we're going to pause there. When we come back, we will continue. We'll have another go-around, and we welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. You can join in. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Malcolm Nance, Rosemary Armeo, all making up the panel this morning. And again, you can join us simply by going to panel@wamc.org. We'll continue with your letters and more conversation after this short break. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday, the 6th of April, 34 minutes past 10 o'clock. We have letters. We'll go to those. And then, let's see, we got about 15 minutes left, so we'll do as much as we can in that limited period of time. We go to Wars, who says, so many things to comment about today. I will focus on how COVID-19 is being framed. This is not a war. It may be warlike conditions in hospitals, but this is a public health crisis. Worse yet, it is an avoidable public health crisis. The war framing is being pushed by the administration. Please do not fall for it. Patricia says, I wish officials in the media would stop calling it a Pearl Harbor moment. That was a surprise attack. We had advance warning of this pandemic, and as a nation, we ignored the warnings from other countries. Failure to lead along with lying and deception. What is wrong with us? We go to Robert, who said it was reported yesterday that Trump has been tested. Oh, I think I read that one already. My apologies. I did not take it out of the queue. We go to Brian and said Joe Biden is not up to the task of being president. He should concede and let Bernie lead the DNC. Nancy says Trump can't cancel the elections per the Constitution. If the election doesn't happen in a specific short amount of days, succession is required, which means Nancy Pelosi becomes president. Don't think they will let that happen either. Yes, Rosemary, were you going to say something?
Well, I was going to say, you know, according to the Constitution, he can't bribe foreign leaders either, but he did do that and got away with it. So, again, our worry about his circumventing the Constitution is real. He's also still got his business. He's accepting emoluments. So the Constitution is there, but it doesn't – there's no Constitution police who immediately step in to enforce it. It takes years of litigation, and by that time, he's already in office for a second term.
But I was surprised that you didn't have anything to say about, in your usual way, about the Bernie letter.
Oh, that's just ridiculous. I'm now discounting Bernie, as we all should.
Keith says that buried in Friday night's news is that Trump is still obstructing justice with the firing of Michael Atkinson, Intel community IG, who took the whistleblower's claims to Congress. Lock him up in 2021, writes Keith. We are taken to task by Tim, who says, please don't be rude and dismissive to conservatives and Trump supporters who write in. After all, you invited them to share their thoughts and opinions, as you did this morning. Instead, calmly respond argue, but do not, but do it rationally, intelligently, intelligently, and without vitriol.
I like the way they can. That's not the way they argue. So everyone else has to be nice. That's nice.
We go to where was it? Oh, there we go. Mike says, esteemed panel, I'm concerned about the news that a tiger has tested positive for the virus. Some information suggests that the virus originated in bats, and obviously it can infect humans. The fact that the virus can infect not very closely related species raises the question of whether wild populations of animals as well as pets could provide a reservoir for the virus. That from Mike in Massachusetts.
No. Okay, so this is one thing I've been keeping up on quite a bit, because as you know, I represent all the animal shelters.
Yes.
The animal-to-human communication of this, you know, disease is close to nil. Everyone is saying it's really not a problem at all. And the shelters are stepping up, and I'm working with lots of people, because our main concern is that people who do get sick do not have a plan in place to deal with their pets. And so the shelters are stepping up, fosters are stepping up to take these animals while people are sick. You know, and the other part of it is the economic downturn and how many animals are going to get dumped at shelters because people can't afford them anymore. But the incidence of transmittal is infinitesimally low. I mean, it really is. And all of that information I've read, all the stuff from the CDC, all the various guidance from veterinary schools are saying, let's not get hysterical about this. It's not something that happens hardly at all. I can't say it never happens, but it's like, you know, like Clorox cleans 99.9% of all germs and viruses. Well, here's the same thing. It's 99.9% sure you're not going to get this virus from an animal.
But okay.
There is, however, an odd nexus between tigers and the coronavirus. The Tiger King, and now the tiger in the Bronx Zoo.
It is strange, and I don't know what. I mean, I've seen all the stuff about Tiger King. I don't know what it is, but let's not get too hysterical.
But it is
about this.
I don't know that we're getting hysterical, but I find it interesting. I find it interesting that an animal has it. I find it interesting that an animal has it in a condition where the zoo has been closed for an extended period of time.
Well, this is true, but animals have had it for a very long time. You know, I mean, this started by eating bats.
Most cats have a form of coronavirus. It does not, and they just slough it off. It's like it does not sicken them the way it does humans.
Yeah.
So it's not, this is not ridiculous and out of the realm of possibility. We just don't know enough about the virus.
Right.
People need to go to school.
Studies
are really important. We need to know more about this stuff.
I'll take the veterinary science from people like Cornell and University of Wisconsin,
right,
and University of Florida any day. So
we go to Joseph, who says, I wonder what will happen when it warms up and the mosquitoes come out. I'll just let that one hang in the
balance. Warmer weather kills this.
Well, I don't think it kills it. I think what it does is it has a suppressive variant, but it comes back in September. Singapore had temperatures over 100 degrees Fahrenheit, 45 degrees Celsius, and it still hit that city state hard. So I would not rely on it, but I don't think it's transmitted by mosquitoes. We'll have to see about that.
Frank writes, remember when Grover Norquist said, my goal is to cut government in half in 25 years to get it down to the size where we can drown it in a bathtub? That's what we are seeing.
Yeah, and also anti-vaxxers. I hope they're getting a good look at what a world without vaccines looks like.
Yep.
Bravo.
That's for sure.
All right. So in our time here, in just the 7 or 8 minutes, there was an article in the New York. There is an article in the New York Times in regards to politics through the looking glass. Virus scrambles the left-right lines. It's basically talking about the politics of this. 4 weeks into this, with the coronavirus sinking the American economy, the federal government was preparing to cut $1,200 checks to tens of millions of citizens, part of a $2 trillion economic stabilization package that was also providing businesses with no interest loans, likely to be partly forgiven, to pay their employees while they are shuttered. The Trump administration was issuing guidance for Americans to stay inside their homes while weighing a New Deal-style infrastructure program and to create jobs. And the CPAC message from long ago seemed a relic from the distant times. That CPAC message was under the banner of America versus Socialism. The convention featured anti-Marx branded popcorn, an RV emblazoned with the word "Socialism takes, capitalism creates," and a children's book promoting personal freedom and private property rights. Speeches included tirades against big government and Medicare for all.
Yeah, how's that working out? We just went, you are seeing, you may see here, second only to the New Deal and the Great Society, the greatest period of socialism in the history of the United States.
Yep.
And
right.
I think this, I don't, look, I'm going to go by what the intelligence community says, because I'm grounded in that. This is not going anywhere until a vaccine is developed and proven effective. So we could be at this time next year or late next fall. So there's going to be a lot of socialism going on here.
We also, go ahead, Alan.
Which raises the question, Malcolm and others, what are the Republicans who are going along with this great period of socialism thinking, right? In other words, what motivates them to send out the checks? Okay, obviously Trump knows he's cooked and his enterprises are cooked. But there's another word that starts with R that has been seen in times like these in our world history, and that's revolution. I mean, if you're not going to feed people, if you're not going to give them the basics for existence, that's when you get people who get out into the streets.
I think it's going to take something. I think it's going to take starvation to get to that point here. I don't foresee it happening. I think even Republicans are smart enough to know that, you know, $1,200 for 1 month is not going to cut it. I wouldn't be surprised if the next if Nancy Pelosi gets everything she wants in the next stimulus, which is almost a universal basic income until this is over.
No, I agree.
Oh, Steve Mnuchin thinks that $1,200 could last a family, 4 or 5 months, if not longer.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. There's also another R word that speaks to who we are as a nation, and that's resilience. Mm. And yes, this is horrible, and this is, you know, worse than anything we've seen in a very, very long time. But I still have faith in the resilience of us as a people and our ability to come together. I mean, the humanity that's coming out of this inhumane situation is something that we haven't seen in a very, very long time.
Well, that's true, Libby. But the problem is, think of all the people who will not join in the resilience, or will not resil, making up a new word, because they're dead and their families.
I get it. I understand. I there's going to be a lot of people who die because of this. The Trump has blood on his hands, as far as I'm concerned.
2 minute warning. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that of all the things that must come out of this, and hopefully the American public being resilient will also not be fooled anymore by November. There has to be very deep accountability on this. I mean, people meets prison on this particular subject.
Mm-hmm.
This is criminal negligence, and there's going to be insane, mesothelioma levels of class action suits against Fox News, the Republican Party. Donald Trump himself can be exposed, especially if he's out of office. But these people need to be held accountable. And we can't say we're in the middle of a national crisis. There was a commission on Pearl Harbor that lasted all the way through the Battle of Midway to hold people accountable for that attack. There was a 9/11 commission, but not a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. This is criminal. We need criminal investigations into this.
All right, we are out of time.
Yeah, resist. Oh, go ahead.
No, that's all right. We're out of time. We have to go. But I do one clarification. I do want to say we were talking about Elise Stefanik earlier, and it has been noted that area lawmakers, especially in the Hudson Valley, Antonio Delgado, along with Pat Ryan and Mark Molinaro. George Amador and others have signed a joint statement, and the governor saying the same thing that Congresswoman Stefanik has said about their concerns about the ventilators being taken from this region and brought
Delgado?
To New York. So, yes.
Delgado signed that?
Yes.
Well, he knows he's got a lot of Republicans in his district. Come on. I don't like it.
So
but in
I just
fact,
wanted to make
absolute,
that point.
It's thank you, Joe, and it's predictable.
They didn't elect him. That's for sure.
All right. We are out of time. My thanks to everybody. Be well. Thank you.
Thank you,
we'll be
guys.
Right back with the Congressional Corner right after this.